Welcome to Real Estate Dads. I hope you're hungry to learn about commercial real estate investing. There's at least five different ways to do it, and Christian is going to talk about some really fascinating aspects of it that you've probably never heard, as well as being a girl dad. So Christian, thanks for coming to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's dive in.
Cool. Let's do it.
All right. So Christian, tell us about your business career.
In real estate, business career. I've been in commercial real estate for 25 plus years. You could probably chalk it up longer than that off camera. I told you I come from a real estate family. So my parents have been doing real estate / commercial real estate for 50 years. All this stuff, you know, Cody and Bryant and all the wholesaling and the fix and flips, my dad always used to joke with them. His health is deteriorated now, but he used to joke with them that he was doing that before they gave it a name. And so he started in real estate, fixing up houses and then building new builds and then selling out of those, and learned about 1031 exchanges and then fourplexes and then eightplexes and then 50 unit apartments and then office buildings. And then when I graduated college, naturally it was like, okay, I'm either going to go work for someone else or I'm going to work with them. And right at the time that I graduated is when 9/11 hit. So I studied finance, business, and MIS, which is now computer science. So I thought I was going to go work for AT&T or Deloitte and Touche or one of these tech firms that was, you know, real popular back in the early 2000s. And of course, 9/11 hit and all the job offers that were out there froze. So dad said, I guess you're coming to work for me, and put me on one of the crews. He had apartment buildings here in Phoenix, down by ASU. We had, I think at the time, four apartments, about 300 units, and they were not the prettiest of apartments. And so I ran a crew of like 10 guys and started emptying out buildings, and we would just go through and just renovate the whole entire, you know, floor by floor, you know, five units at a time, all the flooring, all the walls, all that kind of stuff. So then from there, I got my real estate license and I started working for, I knew I wanted to get into development. I never really wanted to be just a broker, but I knew I had to start somewhere. So I went and worked for a small developer down in Tucson, cut my teeth on leasing and, you know, helping him buy small lots and, you know, small retail projects. And then from there, got to network and know some of the guys at one of the big development companies, and they ended up offering me a position to come work on their leasing team. So I went there and I started working leasing out parcels and giant power centers that they were building with, you know, Walmart and Home Depot and PetSmart. And I was in charge of, you know, the shops buildings and the single tenant buildings out, you know, up on the street frontage, you know, where all the cars drive in. And, you know, then after that, I moved to Phoenix and tried to open my own little development company. That was round one, and that did not work out well. didn't know the business side of it. Thought, okay, we'll come in, we'll buy some projects, we'll start developing some stuff, and then we'll close it and then we'll make a ton of money. But I didn't think about all the bills you had to pay during the period of time from when you take down a project to when the project's closed. So there was just poor planning. The market crashed, you know, in 2006-07. My parents still had shopping centers I'd helped them purchase. So I went back to kind of helping them figure out how to add some value to those centers, how to, you know, sell out of some of their apartments. And here we are today, round two, Hungry Investments.
And your specialty now is, let's hear about the banks.
So that's just one thing. So if we want to mention what my specialty is, you can kind of put it into like three different buckets, but they're all within triple net retail. So if you look at commercial real estate, there's really five asset classes. And we focus heavily on one being triple net retail. So then if you break that down further, there's a couple of different things in there. So one is we do a lot of land entitlement. So we'll find small, anything from 20,000 square feet to 12, 14, 15 acres. And the larger the site, the more that goes into it from an entitlement standpoint. So the large tracts of land will come in and kind of do the land planning. It might not all be for triple net retail, but we can buy it. We can put everything in place. We can sell off portions to, say, a storage developer or a multifamily guy, or, you know, maybe there's a portion in the back that makes sense for townhomes, anything like that. And then we're left with the portion that we really want. And we almost have a zero cost basis in it.
Wow.
So that's one option. The other thing we might do is, like I said, on a smaller parcel, or if there's an older building that's just functionally obsolete and we know that we have a user for it, we can come in and we can work with, a lot of times, national credit tenants, and we'll get everything put in place and we'll lease it to them. And then we turn around and sell that to investors on the open capital market for cap rate returns. The third aspect is what we're doing with our fund now, which is gap funding some of what I just mentioned in option one and two, but option three is looking for add value opportunities similar to what I helped my parents do. Not so much what I did with some of the big development companies that I worked for, but more so if there's a grocery store, you know, grocery anchored shopping store that's on the corner, we want to find the, you know, multi-tenant strip center that's down the street or across the street that might have, you know, vacancy in it, too much parking, mom and pops, and we can come in, we can give it a facelift, reposition some of it, bring in some national credit tenants, just bring it back to life. And those are the three options.
Awesome.
You have a kid.
I do.
One that was unplanned, right?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So we were talking about this a little bit. Yeah, well, I have a daughter. She's 14. She's my best friend, which makes it kind of hard to parent sometimes. She's our only child. So.
Prodigal daughter.
And you were an only child.
I was an only child.
Prodigal son.
Yes. So she's the princess, the queen of the coop. So she's a good kid. She doesn't give us a hard time. Wish she would. I think now after last year, she realizes the importance of getting good grades. We went through that little lull where it was like, wow, how are your grades like this? Like, she's really athletic. She's really good at sports. She plays club softball. She does great. She plays volleyball for school. She's just very much an athlete. And so I think that's where it's fun. So that's where her attention goes. And then she goes to a tough school. She doesn't go to a pushover. So they're like teaching them Latin, and like she's coming home with math homework where you have to calculate the altitude of a stragnamius triangle. And I'm like, well, I can't help you do that. So, like, it's not the easiest, but I, you know, we've gotten to the point now where she's sees the importance on it. So we would love to have another kid. We've been, you know, we've talked about it, and we've been, what do they say, practice makes perfect. But I don't have a blueprint for it, so I can't exactly tell you how the first one happened. I mean,
I could tell you how it happened.
Yeah, I can surmise how it happened. I can't tell you like where or what or when it happened, but you know, if I guess it's in God's hands, and if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. But
how did it change you?
Well, that's easy. I joke with my wife all the time that she felt like we were having a kid for almost a year. She felt, you know, the women are carrying the child. They feel it. There's that connection.
And they lord it over you, too.
Yeah.
I've been holding this for this long.
Yeah,
you need
of course.
To get it from now on.
Yeah, but as soon as, I mean, we were at the hospital, and it was like, oh, yeah, we're having a baby. We're having a baby. And then all of a sudden, whoosh, and the baby comes out, and you hear that cry, and I was like, it's almost like a melt comes over you, and you're like, I made that. And that, like, it's weird because it's like that ear-piercing cry that you hear in the delivery room is like alarm bells going off in your brain, and it's like instantaneous, like sparks, like that's my child.
That's how it was for you, huh?
Yeah, fuck around and find out.
There you go. There
yeah. You go. Yeah, so I mean, that was that the day that she was born, like life's never been the same. And I will say it's way better than it was before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, she's like my best friend. We joke around. I mean, obviously, you know, have the commercial real estate company, have the media company. So like she would grab the phone and, you know, TikTok was coming up and like Instagram, and we'd be, you know, there's days where I'd be working at Starbucks on the computer, and mom's a nurse. So mom would be, you know, at the hospital on shift. I'd have to, you know, go pick up my daughter. She's little at the time. So go meet with people at the coffee shop and get some work done there. And she's got her little phone, and she's over in the corner, and she's like, hey guys, it's Quinn. Thanks for tuning in. And she's like mimicking and modeling all these like YouTube videos that the kids sit on their iPads and watch. And she's a character. And so like we have all those videos, and like we joke sometimes in the car, because she's my biggest fan and my biggest hater all at the same time.
14, are you?
Oh yeah.
I mean, you're kind of going into that. More,
there's there's always a banter. Like, here's the thing: you better not make fun of me, but she can make fun of me all she wants. Like, that's what I say. She's like my biggest fan and my biggest hater. She will roast me on a pike, and like, you know, add all the marinades and all the spices, but it's only for her. Nobody else gets to eat. No pun intended. Yeah.
So you started, in your current venture is what, how long ago?
Yeah. So we started up we got the Hungry Investments, the new development company, 2 years in October and November of this year.
And right before that, you were working on your parents' portfolio?
Yeah, so helping them. Obviously, like I said, my dad's had some health issues over the last like 5 years. When he first started getting sick, I had to step in and help my mom, and I had to evaluate where we were at. You know, a mom and pop with a large real estate portfolio, doesn't, you know, not a lot of employees, not super funded. Things that are out of state that are not, you know, can't get in the car and just drive by. So a lot of stuff goes unnoticed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of like local tenants. So who are the first people to get hurt with financial? Who are the first people to ask, you know, hey, I need help. Can I, you know, can we reduce the rent? Like just a lot of stuff. And I'm like, two things. We either need to turn this all around, or we need to just dispo what we have, get the cash, and then figure out a new plan and reallocate. And so it just made more sense looking at their existing portfolio that in order to maximize the value, they had a lot of appreciation because they had bought these things and just collected rent and managed it for years. And when I say years, I mean like 20 years. So they paid like $700,000-$900,000 per shopping center, and these things were now without any CapEx put into it, no updating, nothing, at least worth $6 million.
Oh wow.
Just on appreciation alone. And so I said, the path of least resistance is to find some local developers, property owners, investment groups that are well capitalized, that have the manpower and the team that can come in and really at, give them, leave some meat on the bone for them to make it worth it, to where it still benefits us and it's a win-win. And I've created some great relationships with some of those companies. So we did that, sold out of all of that. And then that's where I had the conversation and said, look, you guys, where you're at your age, let's figure out what you need to live comfortably every single month. And let's take this money and reinvest it. And part of that reinvesting is let's get this development company off the ground so that we can really, you know, be able to pursue and do some big things. And so that's where we started the development company. I took their money. I started going and investing it into some of the projects that we had. So to answer your, you know, question that you asked earlier about the bank. So with having been a broker for over 20 years, close to 20 years, I built some really good relationships. Being in the triple net, you know, retail world, it's a very blue blood network. It's very, you know, relationship driven industry. It's hard to break into retail. I mean, you can get it. Anyone can get in. If you can buy a building and it's a shopping center, you're in. But there's levels to what we do in the retail, getting to the point where you work with the McDonald's and you work with the Starbucks. Like, you're talking about building relationships with real estate directors. You're talking about building relationships with their tenant reps. You know, they will only, they look for A plus sites. So like, there's all these layers that go into it. And so, you know, we bought a couple of closed banks that are, you know, the deals we're working on. I can't necessarily say where we're at, but I can tell you one, we signed a lease with Circle K. I mean, that's a pretty damn good tenant. And so, you know, took my parents' money from some of their, you know, some of these projects that we sold out and have reinvested it into what we're doing.
So you have this new venture going now. It's only a couple years old, which means it's, you know, it's very young. It's a toddler, right?
Yeah.
Which needs a lot of attention.
Yep.
How are you giving time to your family as well?
I mean, it's not the hardest thing in the world. I have a lot of flexibility. I mean, doing things today is a lot different than it was, say, 20 years ago when I got into real estate. Mm-hmm. Our entire I used to have like filing cabinets. If I go to my parents' house, this annoys me so much. They have an office there's 12 filing cabinets in there, metal, wood, plastic, whatever, like the little bins that have, you know, files hanging. And I'm like, I've started throwing stuff out, shredding. Like when I go visit them, it's like at least one of the days is just 8 hours of shredding paper and like throwing stuff away. Nowadays, we use the cloud, Google Drive.
Yeah.
You know, it's all, you know, I showed you, we use monday.com. So we have basically a virtual filing cabinet of every single project that we're looking at. Properties get to a certain point. We don't create folders for them until we have certain amounts of information or we know the status. It's all on my phone, on my laptop. So my wife works 3 days a week at the hospital. She can't have her phone on. We don't talk to her she leaves 6 o'clock in the morning and she'll get off at 5:30. She'll send a text here and there on a break or lunch, but it's like if I miss it and I send a response, she's not seeing it till later in the day. I pick my daughter up from school. I take her to softball. I take her to volleyball. We spend a lot of time together. So, you know, with what we do, did I show you that video that my wife took that's on my Instagram? She's in the car with me so much that I told you she roasts me.
Yeah.
So she's big on imitations. Like she'll imitate people. And my wife sends me a video. They went to a track meet and they're driving from the East Valley where we're at over to the West Side. So it took an hour.
Where she's looking at a property.
And they're driving and she's like, see that Sonic? I'm going to buy that. I'm going to tear it down and I'm going to put a Starbucks. And she did that for an hour. Driving from like this side of the town over to the West Valley, and my wife sends it to me. I'm like, Okay, great. She just helped me create some content. So now we've got a series where we're recording her and she's making fun of me in the car. Basically, when your kids, you know, hear you talk about work so much that they're just picking it up, like, you know, that kind of thing. So
what obstacles have you had within all of these, because it sounds like you've had some great successes. You know, what things did you have to overcome to work through all of it?
For on the real estate side?
I mean, just in your career. You know, you've got a lot of wins.
So. I mean, I went through, and Adam, who's behind the cameras, we know each other because he worked with me. We went through the worst real estate valley in history. I mean, the mortgage crisis. Yep. And I felt it from every different direction. I always say, like, damn, I've just been off a little bit on the timing of the market. You can never time the market, right? But just everything's just been a little bit off. Like,
I'm totally disagreeing. I think you totally timed the market.
Well, no, hear me out, though.
Okay, let's hear it.
When I graduated from college, right, I told you I had, like, job offers in the tech world. And then 9/11 happened and the tech bubble burst. Mm. You gotta be kidding me. Okay, so then we go through the process and I get into commercial real estate. But it took a while to learn it. It took, like, 2-3 years to really get ingrained into it and start to understand it. And then we started making some good money. That's when everyone was doing condo conversions, mm-hmm. and like all that kind of stuff. So we sold some big apartments to guys that were going to convert them to condos and made some great commissions. And at the same time too, we were working on stuff, you know, like finding sites for CVS and helping them you know, compete with Walgreens, working with their preferred developers. And then all of a sudden the mortgage crisis happened and we're like, damn, dude, we're just getting off the ground, right? And so I started the development company. I took a break from commercial real estate. I worked for a couple of developers. I needed something. I needed to unplug, and I stopped doing real estate for about 4 years. And that's when I started digging into, like, the media and the marketing and doing that. I need something creative to help me, like, get recharged and find my interest and my love for real estate again. Cause it's cutthroat.
Yep.
Right. Work for a couple developers. Some were good. Learned a lot of things, what to do, what not to do. Worked for one developer that can't take anything away from him. He does a ton of business. But there's a lot of things in how he runs his business that I felt like I needed to take a warm bath afterwards. Like, it just didn't feel right. You know, a lot of, like, conflict of interest and, wait, hold on, I thought I was getting paid on this. And it's like, oh no, well, it's my company, so I get a piece of everything. Like, now we're talking about that? Like, where was that at?
Yeah.
You know, so I needed to unplug. So, like, timing wise and challenges, I mean, there's been plenty of them, right? Like, my parents had a $9 million building that I helped them buy in Texas. And one day our loan was with Lehman Brothers. And all of a sudden we see on the news, people that work for Lehman Brothers with cardboard boxes walking out of the building. We're like, where are we supposed to send our payments? There's nowhere to send the payments. So we open a bank account and we start putting the payments there. 3 years. All of a sudden somebody shows up one day and says, your building, your loan's in default. Like, what loan? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, did somebody want to let us know who we were supposed to pay this to? Like, we tried calling, we tried emailing, like, nobody, who's a special servicer, nothing. Yeah, here's your bill. Well, we have every single payment in a savings account. We're happy to give it to you. Nope. Late fees, penalties, interest, attorney's fees. My parents lost that building.
What? Like,
oh, yeah.
You couldn't sue them over this?
Oh, we tried. My dad tried filing a class action lawsuit, like, all kinds of stuff. It was a subsidiary. The special servicer was a subsidiary company of Halliburton. Who do you think was in office at that time? Dick Cheney.
I was going to say Cheney, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not saying this is a conspiracy theory episode.
We're down for
those. So wait a minute.
Those are great. We're totally okay with those here.
So no one even tried to contact, not a letter, not a phone call, nothing for 3 years.
So what if you had just kept sending the money to...
There was nowhere to send it to. The address was...
But just say you had written a check and you'd written exactly to where you had always been told to send it to and they'd never given you any notice. So you actually sent it, but no one contacted you for a new location. You would have had
a... We never got, but we stopped getting the slips. Because remember, this is, 2008? So they sent you... They gave you, receipt books, mm-hmm. like payment booklets. It wasn't all online and stuff like it is now. So every month you'd get a payment... Here's your invoice at the bottom, cut the check, send the check, or, there was no online payment. You could do ACH and stuff like that, but those stopped coming. The lady that sent those was no longer working at Madison Avenue.
This is so shocking to me that you weren't able to sue them and get
it. We tried. And you have to remember, too, I was a lot younger at that time, so this is my dad taking the lead on it.
Did you have to pay the default payments, or were you able to just give the billing back and keep those?
No, there's a $3.4 million judgment lien on my dad that I'm...
It's recourse.
Mm-hmm. Shit. And they took the building back and they sold it for more than the note. There's a lot of stuff that was wrong with it. So that's just one challenge that was faced. There's plenty. We face challenges every single day working in commercial real estate. A big issue we've dealt with over the last 6 to 12 months is the market was on fire, so all the sellers got used to thinking their properties are worth something, and all of a sudden interest rates went from 3% to 8%, and so the numbers don't look the same. The tenants aren't... Interest rates are going this way, and the tenants want to pay this much, so like you had margins like this that are now here, and then the sellers are like, no, my property's worth more, so it's been like there's been like a waiting period, or, all right, we'll follow back up with you.
Yeah.
So that's kind of...
Yeah, the motivation's relatively low right now on most people to sell. A lot of people don't even know what to do with the money. They get the money, and they're still like, I don't even know where to put it.
Yeah, okay. I think the pain points, the pressure's starting to get ratcheted up a little bit with the banks being like, yeah, we're not extending anymore.
We're going to find out. There's several articles I've read about some of these relatively large lenders, debt funds who put out money, and sure looks like they are completely upside down. Arbor being one of them. Arbor put out a ton of money, and I've read articles about how their average collateralized
option. You saw Goldman Sachs. They raised, what was it, $7 billion for a debt fund to come in and
buy those tranches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And try and basically help alleviate it, but I also think there's a real estate play in there.
I'm sure.
Because if they own all those, and the minute you don't make a payment, I guess Goldman Sachs might be one of the biggest commercial real estate owners. And
downside protection on being first position debt, and then big upside in the event that you inherit some assets that, hey, it's so bad.
I wrote an article called The Debt Tsunami, talking about the debt wall that's coming in 2026. It's part of like our strategy right now, is how we're looking for stuff, is based on what the existing mortgage is.
How long do you think till things start looking, going the other direction?
So that's, again, in commercial, it's a lot different because there's 5 different asset classes. I just had this conversation earlier this morning. Retail is literally at historic levels. And part of that is because there's an increase in demand, but a decrease in supply. So unlike apartments where the net absorption is negative, because let's just say there's 100,000 units available and 50,000 get leased up. Well, that same time period, there's also 200,000 units being brought online. Yep. So you're at a net negative absorption. On the retail side, there's an increase in demand for leasable square footage, but there's also, since COVID, there's been like some crazy amount, I think 155 million square feet of retail that's been demoed because people have been doing either mixed use or apartments or industrial. Like they're just, it's outdated strip center, you know, all this shop space, all the, like these, you know, what we're used to seeing, like the long skinny buildings just cut into, you know, retail bays. It's changed, right? Like retail is going through a renaissance. It's more experiential, a mix of restaurants with shopping, and like, you know, people want to go and make an event out of it. They don't just want to necessarily go and see the nail salon next to the title place, next to the t-shirt shop, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, right, you know, to answer your question, it just depends what asset class you're looking at. So like retail right now is flying high. Even though, you know, the only thing affecting us is the interest rates and trying to, you know, bridge the bid ask gap from the sellers and what we're willing to pay. But that's just kind of like a chess game. Apartments, I think, are a little shaky.
18 to 24?
I mean, maybe even, here's the thing you have with apartments. People always need a place to live. And I don't want to get too political. But we have open borders right now.
You could talk about it. It's all right. You know, it's one of those things that you know, a lot of people are wondering. You know, with all these new people who are here, the country.
There has to be a place for them to live. I mean, if you look and see how many people are coming across the border, until that gets addressed, there, I don't, like, yeah, you can have issues. Again, that's an issue of, I think it's more so the people that have been building apartments that take 2 to 3 year loans that are interest only. It's harder for them to find permanent financing. So it's not so much an issue of the fundamentals on the properties as much as it is, the date you told me I had to pay this back to you, I can't find anyone else to come in and
come up with a third of the value of the loan to pay it down to get
or yeah, they want, yeah, they want you to bring in a bunch more capital.
The immigrants need to be housed. The tax dollars or money they're going to spend to be able to either stabilize those individuals, or if there's a plan by Trump to, you know, do this mass exodus of these individuals, which I don't know what's going to occur.
I don't know how you're going to do that.
I think that's the big head scratcher, you know, but all of the last boom in cycle was due to several factors. One of which was they were not building new housing in 2007 through 2012. There were not projects that were coming out of the ground they were getting tailed in from, you know, 4, 5, and 6, 7, 8, and 9. Nothing was really starting, and not really starting again probably till 12 or 13, till things started bouncing out. And then you also had this massive spending that had occurred during those years to get the economy back up and running. So you had massive, you had some inflationary pressures in addition to a shortage of supply that just did this big run up. And now I go, gosh, is that really what's on the other side of this? You know, 8 million more people that are in the country, a lot of government printing of money that has also occurred. You know, it's I definitely look at it and have some, you know, thoughts. The other thing that I've also just been both personally experiencing as well as just seeing the market is, you know, these buildings, when I started my career in 2000, building built in the 70s, it was just a 30-year-old building. Now it's a 50-year-old building.
Yes.
And, you know, and there are these assets that, you know, you don't think they're that old, but man, the deferred maintenance is so bad.
Well, look at a lot of people too, trying to figure out in the office market, how do you turn those into apartments?
But you can't.
You have one bathroom per floor.
You can
technically take the concrete, you know, or frame building, but you got to add how much load to your water and sewer lines. Like
when we looked at it, first the buildings that we saw that were office buildings, the cost, you've got the building for free, the cost to retrofit made the deal not work.
Yeah, that's like New York. They've been trying to offer that up, and the city's like, yeah, we'll give you these buildings, but it still doesn't pencil.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's something for our kids to figure out. Since this is the Real Estate Dads podcast, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we should get back onto the dads topic, because it's just inflation and market.
So I got some good questions here that are kind of...
Well, we can talk about from a dad standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you talk about inflation, the older they get, they inflate on how much they cost.
Oh.
Just letting you know, she's 14 now. So it goes from, like, now she's into, like, Lululemon and, like, name brand stuff. All the makeup and all the...
Because she's your friend.
Oh, yeah. It's all right, though. My wife she'll tell you, like, her birthday's on Saturday, so this will come out after her birthday. Guaranteed. There's, like, new softball gear in there. And she comes to the field and she's like, "Dad, I don't need all this gear." I'm like, "Yeah, you do. Trust me. We're going to put it to use."
So what advice do you have for the girl dads out there?
I mean, I don't know. I think, like I said, she's my best friend. So like, as they get older, I know, how old are yours?
2 and 5.
Yeah. So they're like, that age is like, you come home and they want to like crawl up in your lap and watch Dora or, you know, whatever.
Doc McStuffins.
Doc McStuffins. Yeah. Like all that. And okay, cool. And then they start to get older. Like I finally got to that age. She still wants me to tuck her in. But, you know, they used to be like, "Here, daddy." Like, you know, and now she's like,
with the right attitude.
Here. I'm like, okay. So they still want the same things. It's just not the same that you think of, right? So you're thinking like, okay, we're going to sit on the couch and she's going to cuddle up, but she's getting bigger. Right. So she still wants to cuddle. She wants to sit next to you. Right. She wants to like, she wants to be on the iPad and like be just dad's right there. Like I got that sense of security. So, I mean, if you're a girl dad, you're going to get really accustomed to like that bond that you're building with them when they're that smaller age. Just keep in mind as they get older, it's still there. Don't get butt hurt because it's they're the ones changing the rules on it. Like they're still your best friend. You know, support them and constantly reinforce how much you love them, how much you know, how great they are, like how important it is to you every single day just to, you know, be around them. Like all that's like the best thing you can do is build their self-confidence, build their, you know, self-esteem. And just make sure that they understand, you know, how great they are and how important they are.
What big trips have you taken with them, with your family, with your wife and daughter?
So for us, I mean, we're kind of an active family. So we talked about this. I mean, COVID hit and that kind of derailed some stuff. We were going to go to like Maldives and, you know, St. Thomas and stuff like that. We got passports. We did it all. Then we were going to go to Hawaii, but they didn't want to go because it was still kind of weird. So we did a lot of like local hiking, camping type stuff. But I learned how to ski. I'm from California originally, San Francisco.
Okay.
So I learned how to ski at North Star.
Yeah.
When I was 5. So when she was 5, my wife wanted, and I thank her for being the one that made us do this. Let's go to North Star so Quinn can learn how to ski. At the same place you did. Oh, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And so we did that and we try and do that at like one of those types of trips every single year. So Park City, went skiing there, you know, Vail, Telluride, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like an annual thing. We just had this conversation last night. Because she's so into softball, she's gotten really into baseball. So like we've had season tickets for the Diamondbacks. So every home series, we try and go to at least half of those games, whether it's just me, her and my wife, me, her and a friend. Maybe she'll just come with me and I take one of the guys, you know, from work or, you know, we give the tickets away. But we've been doing a lot of that. So now the whole family is really into watching the games at home if they're on the road. And now we've started talking about trying to go to different cities and going to games at some of those different stadiums and kind of checking some of those off the list.
I used to love to go into games at Giant Stadium in San Francisco.
Yep.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the new stadium looks pretty cool too. I've never been there.
Yeah, me either. Yeah,
that whole McCovey Cove.
I haven't been. You know, I
hit it out over the right field fence into the water.
Into the water. The old Giant Stadium, you know, there wasn't a bad seat in the house and it was right downtown. So if you're in the city, it was super easy to go there. And we never bought tickets from
I was a big Bash Brothers Oakland A's fan when I lived in San Francisco. So we used to go to the Coliseum.
Yeah, yeah.
And now that's going to be right up the street from you when Tropicana's built.
Yeah, they're turning it down, man. Yeah. You drive by, you see him pushing stuff out the, you know, little guy in a skid loader.
Yeah. Beep,
beep. Pushing stuff off the side of the building.
Dude, Vegas is going nuts still. Vegas has been going nuts forever. It's just so funny because Vegas is so cyclical with the economy, but yet it keeps getting
reinvented.
So yeah. Yeah.
Used to have zero professional sports, and now it's a professional sports mecca.
Well, you know, that market as well as Arizona, you know, was so heavily tied to interest rates, you know, building such a large portion of the jobs industry was construction. So during both recessions for Vegas and Arizona, it was like once the building stopped, there was this mass glut of unemployment.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Vegas seemingly the same, except that Vegas, you look at it, it's like it's got these new massive things. And it's, yeah.
The sphere. The sphere. How is that? It's dope.
It's dope. What is that? Is right.
Yeah.
It's like the cool best stuff. New concert venue you could go to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Except
that I'll just take people to drive by. I'm just
except that
it,
like, it defaulted, right? Didn't it default on his debt?
I don't think so.
No. I don't know.
It was like
I just know that you can go watch a concert there and feel like you're on drugs without taking any.
What? Fantastic.
Yeah. There was a falling out with the CFO because he got yelled at by the CEO being like $800 million in the hole or something like that.
Well, I think they were expecting their ad spend to be significantly more. Which, you know, might be something that picks up later, but, you know, because they have this entire thing, they're planning on selling ad space the entire outside of it for a huge, huge dollar amount. I'm not sure that's going to materialize at least yet.
I can see it.
Yeah. I mean, if they don't have an ad on them, I guess that someone couldn't sell the time.
It mostly doesn't have ads.
I'm sure it's really cheap to have on all day without ads.
Yeah, I'm sure that costs them nothing. So, what is a helicopter parent?
The way that I understand it, like a parent that's constantly hovering over their kid and won't let them like figure out life on their own. Like, no, don't touch that. It's dirty. No, don't touch that. You'll get hurt. Stop climbing on that. Like, I mean, yeah. I don't know about you guys, but
it's a mom.
When I was little, dude, I learned by
grabbing a hot iron.
Yeah, putting my hand on the stove when mom said not to. I told you not to touch that. Yeah, guess what? I never touched it again.
Yeah, there's a bunch of sayings that, you know, the mother is supposed to be the one who's the nurturer, and the dad is supposed to teach the kid to be wild. And, you know, and I feel like, you know, at home, it's like totally the truth. Why are you letting him climb over that? Because he's got to learn to climb over that. I'm not going to stop him.
Damn, I stuck a fork in an outlet. That was the last time I ever did that.
You did that?
Oh, hell yeah.
Ooh.
I don't remember it, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't too bad because I'm still sitting here.
Yeah. I remember doing those things when I was a kid. Yeah, I vividly remember pulling the plug out just enough for me to touch my finger to it.
I don't remember who it was, but someone was like said to us one time, like, you should get the outlet covers.
I got swarmed by bees when I was a kid, when I was like 4. That was one. That was a pretty big one. It did. And one of the kids was allergic to bees.
I got my head. So I grew up in San Francisco, you know, the row houses.
Yeah.
How the stairs go up to the front and then they got like the iron railing.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a basketball hoop that was like connected to it. And everyone, all the kids on the street would play hoops out there. I don't even think it was actually 10 feet. It was probably like 11 and a half. Who knows? But the ball got stuck in between the rim and the backboard. And I just thought this would be great. Stick my head through the railing and punch it out. And then I got my arm back through, but my head went in. It just wouldn't come out.
Oh, my.
I stuck there.
It's almost more painful coming back this way. This is a more sensitive part.
Dude, it was like my ears were like stuck. I couldn't get my head.
Your feet were touching.
Oh, I was on the stairs, like on the inside, and I stuck my arm and my head through, and I knocked the ball out because it was stuck between the rim and the backboard. But I couldn't get out, and my dad was at work. My mom's trying to like put melted butter and stuff on there, see if. Then my dad came, and he's putting like oil, like motor oil.
They're wood. They're metal. They're metal.
It was metal, so you know how they have like.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So then he goes and gets his soldering gun, his welding gun, and puts like a big thing over me. He had to like weld it and bend it so I could get my head through there. So like.
Oh man.
Yeah, I mean. So helicopter parents, like, let your kids stick their head through the railing. It's good for them.
I agree. Yeah. I threw my 1-year-old in the pool yesterday.
Oh. And she learned how to swim, didn't she?
No, but she had a lesson. Yeah.
She learned what to stay. She learned what was dangerous.
Yeah.
You know. She learned not to go.
I pulled her out before she passed out underwater. Yeah. You know, but she gave it everything she had.
But how long before she passed out?
She gave it a good old fashioned shot.
She was probably underwater for like a solid 3 seconds, like looking up at me like, what the? You know, and like, but like she kicked and like she just got so close to the surface, like, you're almost there, you're almost there. And she wasn't getting closer. I was like, all right, it's enough for now. Do this again next.
You know, I think the helicopter parent is also the same as the helicopter boss. There's an issue going on. Someone shows up.
Yeah.
Tells you what to do to fix it and then leaves.
Like, yeah, well, you show them.
I could have handled that.
You show them how to do everything without actually letting them figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I am constantly telling, you know, my wife handles guest communication. She has very high expectations of how guests should be treated in Airbnb business. And, she'll be always like glad to help our employees, you know, who are usually Filipinos, right? Do this stuff, and I'm constantly just like, just stop. You know, they'll reach out. They reach out all the time to her with questions about how to deal with this or that guest, because she's like, you can reach out anytime, and then they do. I mean, just let them figure it out.
You know, there's a story about Napoleon, who apparently that he would not open mail for way longer than most other generals would have done. He would intentionally not open the mail because when he would, generally the people would have figured out what to do before he actually got back to it. And it was someone who was like, he's going to be slow to actually better
figure this out. Yeah, give him a chance.
I love it. Yeah. That's must be like a real estate dad thing, or maybe it's just like a guy thing because we're on the same page. Like, let him fall down.
And there's times I catch myself where I'm like,
I was going to say, men are teaching independence. I didn't interrupt you.
No, it's just the same thing. Like, Quinn's at the age now. She's turning 14. So, like, we felt she's dealing with some anxiety, like, with tryouts and stuff. And I think that age, that's why I'm saying, like, as much as you can instill self-confidence and, you know, self-esteem and anything that you can, they start getting into that, like, pre-teen age where things are awkward. Boys come into the picture. Friend cliques, things like that. Like, they start figuring out what their identity is. Like, she's an athlete, but then it messed up her grades. So we had to like balance that out and like constantly trying to work through it. So having a regimen at home, like, we just figured out that it's good for them to have chores. Like, it's not just because it helps you out. It's good to give them something that they feel like they're accomplishing, whether they like it or not.
Purpose.
And like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Purpose. So like,
feel what it feels like to be done.
I could go
with work.
We can go hire a VA overseas and you know, save some money on task-based work. But then I'm also like, yeah, but I could also have Quinn do it for me and maybe start getting her to understand a little more like why I say, we're going to buy that Sonic and Bulldozer. Like, you know, I think she's going to start to put the pieces together. So I, you know, she likes working on the computer better than her just being on the iPad or playing Roblox or doing whatever that is. And so I just wrote out a little list and I said, here's what I need you to do. And here's the websites and just click here. And it was very same thing, repetitive, but she also felt good when she was done and she helped Daddy, you know, get some stuff done for work.
Does she manage your TikTok?
No. I hate TikTok. I like most socials. I hate TikTok. Sorry, TikTok. Not sorry.
When is it okay to yell at your kids?
Never.
The first time.
The first time it's okay?
No, not just saying that
I don't think it's good to yell at your kids. And I think yelling in general causes a lot of stress. I will say that I would rather have my son know that I'm serious rather than getting to a point where it becomes like, I'm not like, sometimes it's not a negotiation. Hey, I want you to do this. And I need you to know that dad's serious. But generally what I found is that the few times that I have raised my voice, that was the last time I raised.
There's a difference between yelling and
raising your voice.
Being stern. I grew up in a family that had a lot of arguing. And I have to talk with my wife. Both my wife and my daughter will be like, why are you yelling at me? I'm like, I'm not.
Oh.
Because in my mind, the way I was raised, whoever spoke loudest got their point across.
This was sounds very similar. My parents, there was a ton of yelling, and I'm very sensitive to it, actually. But I'm also in this kind of like, you know, there are things we have to
get done. And I'm not saying I don't yell. And then I'm like, why did I do that? And it's like, you can only say you're sorry so many times before it starts to lose. So like, got to be very selective.
Got to actually make changes.
Yeah. I will also comment.
It creates anxiety too. I found that like.
Well, what I've also learned is, you know, we try to really make a lot more things. That's one thing we've really tried to learn more of. Because, you know, because with the yelling or being stern, you know, sometimes, you know, especially for a kid who's really young, like my son, he's just 2.5. So instead of saying, hey, I need you to do this, because he can understand, he's good, you know, hey, who can do this faster? You know, and then all of a sudden we have a little more of a game. Mm-hmm. It's getting done as a result faster. And, you know, and I'm not saying that can work 100% of the time, but I'll definitely say I've found a lot of ways to play with my kid that do not involve, that involve him getting something done and also having it be, you know, not yelling. And I think that's been actually really great.
That's good.
I'm all about carrot stick.
Carrot.
Consequences. Yeah. If you do good stuff, you get good stuff. You know, right now ice cream works pretty good, but you know, it'll be something else. And if you don't, then there's a consequence.
Wait till it goes from ice cream to Apple Cash. That's coming.
What we have to wait for.
It's coming. Yeah, I'll get a text. So need cash. I'm like, what'd you do? Need.
Oh my God. So when is it okay to hit your kids?
Never. I'm not gonna say I didn't spank, but I, you know, first kid.
So you spanked?
Yeah, but it wasn't like.
When's the last time?
It wasn't like over the lap. Like I'll tell you, even my dad didn't agree with this. Like he whooped my ass with a belt one time, and it was only one time ever. He felt so bad. Like my mom says he was in the bedroom crying. Like I can't, but he felt like it was needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so like when she was real little, there was a couple of times where it was like, grab that arm and smack that butt. But then it's like, no, you can't hit. Cause it is putting the wrong idea in their head. And at that age, I don't think they really understand what that is, what they did that.
It's primal. They just understood. It just makes them disciplined and respectful, but it doesn't teach.
Or it makes them disassociate. And I'm going to give an example of this because this just happened this weekend. I was at the beach with my family, and there's a small dock that's only 30 feet out in the water. You can swim out to it. You can jump off of it. And I took a paddleboard. Me and my son Graham are on this little dock. And on the other side of it, out in the water, not far, there's this dad absolutely yelling at his daughter, who was like 7. He called her a brat. He called her spoiled. He was yelling at her for not paddling with this kid's paddleboard with the paddle. And she was crying. And the first thing I thought of was, this is a stepdad. And he's yelling across over me to, like, I don't know if his wife or who it was. She's being a brat. He might have even dropped an F-bomb. And it was so inappropriate that I was actually doing this before the guy jumped off his board to go get the girl. But I was going to go over and just tow the daughter in on the paddleboard. Just go, hey, grab this, I'll just tow you. I wasn't gonna say anything. I was just gonna like hopefully just help calm things, as opposed to giving him a talking to or anything like that, which I don't think would
help. Yeah, but your kid's there too, so your kid's being subjected to it.
He heard it. Yeah, my kid's my kid is under 3, so he's.
But I would
you know,
totally. Understand if you did give him a talking. Like,
you know, hey, I didn't want to make the situation. I don't want to make the situation worse, and I didn't want the daughter who, you know, I don't know what the situation is at home. You know, mom's got a boyfriend, mom's got the guy. I don't think it was the dad, and the reason I don't think it was the dad is because the dads who go through every tiny milestone of improvement of discipline from their child being born all the way through understands that your kid comes out not knowing anything. They don't know anything, and they're learning everything. And there's things that, you know, you think, you see someone go, why doesn't she just put her paddle in and paddle? And the answer was she was scared, and she did. She shut down. This guy's yelling at her. She wasn't being helpful.
It gives you the exact opposite result.
Exact opposite result.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and I just went, this person has never worked with a kid. I can see that because, you know, people who kind of step into being with kids, you know, there's an expectation. The kid is supposed to do this. And well, how do I get the kid to do this? But they have no practice. They didn't see the milestones for that. They don't know where the kid's development is at. and the only stick they have is a punishment yelling stick, and because they haven't gone through all of it. I don't know if the guy was a stepdad, but that was the first thing I could guess. And this is not a ding on stepdads, but what I would give a ding to is just, you know, the expectations on how to handle a situation for people that were there from the beginning are it's a more full breath understanding of where the child is.
How old are your kids?
Both under three. So my daughter's 3 months, and my
son's 10. You guys know that sense, like how innocent they are, like when they look at you and it's like they just curious, bright eyed, like you're like, even if they're doing something wrong, they have no idea. They're just
no clue.
Exploring and like how cool that is.
Yeah.
The hitting and the yelling, the thing that it's the saddest thing about that is that it strips that innocence away every single time. And it just dulls, like you said, disassociation. It'll dull that light when you see them look at you like, daddy, like holding a dirty diaper, like so proud that they pooped in the diaper. And you're like, the first thing you want to be is like, don't get that anywhere. But then you just see the look in their eyes and it's like, they're so proud. You don't want to strip that. That's the saddest part about those types of things.
It's not effective at anything useful. Mm-mm.
There's much better ways, and it's not like,
much of anything.
I do plan on looking forward to doing jiu-jitsu and boxing with my son when he's older. I look forward to that, you know. And I think, you know, actually, I'll comment on this too. We have some other parents whose kids are hitting, and you know, we have to tell the parents, "Hey, look, can you tell your son not to hit?" And they're like, "Oh, well, you know, I can't get him to stop." And we've actually had to tell them, "Look, either you can tell your kid to stop, or we're not going to hang out with you anymore." Just so you get it.
You know what I've told my kid to do in that situation?
Get back. I'm not, you know, we're not there yet, but I'm guessing we're probably going to come across the indecision on that. This particular parent, they knew that their child had another group of friends that were hitting like all the time. And they were told, "Hey, look, you gotta separate from those individuals." And I don't think that's a permanent solution. I mean, we're at a park, we're somewhere else, you know, same thing on the helicopter parenting, you know, we've got to teach. You know, and I've been at places where the kids are playing really rough, and my son is in the roughness of it, and I don't get in, I don't get involved. You know, if I see abuse happening, I'll step in, but you know, had to be okay. My kids are learning rough play.
You just gotta let it happen. It's gonna happen anyway.
Yeah. What I was gonna say was when my son was doing certain things too hard, we would ask him if he could do it gentle, and that helped. Because then he would try to do whatever the thing was that he was doing hard. Maybe he did hit you. Hey, can you do that gentle? And then
or at a certain point, remember I told you, you just got to take him to a pig farm in Medford and have him castrate baby pigs for the weekend.
How early should I do that? Four?
Take him on
four,
a cattle drive.
Old, five years old.
Four. Make sure that you got two sets of hens sitting on the eggs. Yeah. Tell them they can't eat unless they grab the eggs.
This is good.
Yeah, getting kicked by a pig or a cow.
Yeah, make sure it's a cow that's real pissed.
Are you familiar with mutton busting?
No.
Ooh, yeah.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
It's a bull riding for kids. You put them on a sheep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mutton busting. That's
all right.
Perfect.
So dinosaurs make oil, which makes petroleum, which makes polypropylene plastic.
Dinosaurs made dinosaurs.
Dude, that's like Inception.
Plastic dinosaurs are real.
That's Inception.
Is it?
Kind of.
Maybe. I don't know.
Dream within a dream.
I just read it. Sounded legit, so.
That's it. You know what? You should get to put that on a tweet.
I think you got it from a tweet.
That's even more Inception. It's a tweet within a tweet.
How did the first person that made the first clock know what time it was?
Talking about a sundial? Well, they probably, I think they established it, and they knew that the Earth rotated 360 degrees based on rotations around the sun. So they knew that 360 degree rotation was the right amount.
You lost me, but I think you're wrong.
Well, 360 degrees for one full rotation of the planet, and that was by 360 by 24. And those are the degrees on time zones. So when they started, those were the original calendars that they were using. They were based on some actual mathematics that were based on astronomy that they And so the first guy, you have a clock. I don't know about the clock. I mean, they keep finding some of these mechanisms, like the Antithica mechanism, some other stuff that they found. They believe were things that could track astronomy.
Dude, he's
kind of spooky how much he knows about this.
No, you know what? Remember I was telling you about the triangles and math homework?
Yeah.
Dude, you're set. Seventh grade, eighth grade doesn't have anything on you.
The seasons, the summers, there were even 13 zodiacs at a period of time. And they got rid of one of the zodiac symbols and made it down to 12 because they've got leap year, which doesn't actually add up correctly within the course of a year. If you actually do it right, there would be 13 zodiacs instead of 12. I think that's enough on that topic.
Education.
He's good on
ancient history.
Yeah, history and sociology.
That's all I got.
Great.
Hopefully we got some useful stuff out of it.
We did. I think we did.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, man. So we got to get your contact info. Do we have time to...
Christian, who are you looking for to find you?
Yeah.
Who can find you? Who do you want to find you? Do you not want anyone to find you? What are...
I'm the exact opposite of not wanting anyone to find me. We're literally putting out blog posts and YouTube videos every other week.
What's the objective of your... What's the objective of that? What are you looking for?
I mean, you guys are in the real estate world.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like we can add a lot of value to people that are either starting to get... People that have been investing in real estate and want to start expanding and either learning how to get into commercial, learn about commercial. Commercial, like I said, it's not, there's so many facets and basically like choose your own adventure. You can become a jack of all trades and a master of none. And that doesn't really help you because at the end of the day, if you're just okay at it, you're not going to make much money. But if you really find something and you go deep, what do they say? The riches are in the niches. Mm-hmm. You're 20 feet deep and 3 feet wide versus 20 feet wide and 3 feet deep.
Have you heard the whole saying of the jack of all trades?
What's the full saying?
It's better to be a jack of all trades than a master of one, because a master of many is a master of none, but it's still better to be a master of many than a master of one. It's a full saying.
I'm sure I butchered it. But I mean, in commercial, like there's enough carryover. So ideally from our standpoint, if people are into real estate and this is the next progression or the next level, we're putting out content that explains what it is we do day in and day out in our business. If you're trying to learn how to get started in investing, or maybe you decide like, hey, this development thing sounds cool. It's taken 20 years, right? So obviously there's a lot of courses out there. I always joke that if we put a course together on how to get into development, it'd be the worst course ever because it would take too long to get any results and everyone would want to get their money back. But that doesn't mean there's not things we can do to help people. So, we're building a newsletter list where we can share market reports and information and things that are coming up and at least help people. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. So we know where to find the information, what information is good information, and how to help people kind of navigate the ups and downs and, you know, get on our buyers list. We see so many deals, and it just because a deal is not something that we would particularly buy doesn't mean it's not a good deal. It just doesn't fit into our bucket. And, you know, there's only 24 hours in a day, and we have to guard that between being fathers and spending time with our family. And the hours that we do work, let's put our time where the return for what we're best at is going to be maximized.
And where do they get in contact with you?
So hungry-inc.com. That's our website. You can go there. You can find all of our socials, but basically Hungry Investments on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. And then join our newsletter list, get on our buyers list. And if you have properties you want to send us, we can take a look at those too. It's all on the website.
Education and opportunity.
Correct.
Love it.
Resources, all that stuff. We're trying to create a community on our website and online that is not, we're showing real stuff that we're doing day in and day out, not the fancy cars and the, you know, a lot of guys in the commercial real estate that have done really well are not that, you know, not in the social media world per se. And if they are, they're in only on this one. And so we're just trying to make it easier for people to find info.
Oh, Grant Cardone is not the only successful.
No, and to be honest, like, I don't know Grant. Grant's really good at raising money and really good at doing a lot of, you know, certain media things, but he's only doing, like, honestly, he's only really doing apartments, so. And I'm not dogging on Grant Cardone at all. I follow Grant Cardone.
You got other stuff. Yeah. There's things
I follow Grant for other reasons, though. I want to figure out how he's, what he's doing to get so much attention.
Yeah, I think that's a secret sauce.
He's really good.
He's really good at
And he's really good at creating content, which I feel is entertaining and informative. Yep. And I pick up some good stuff from him.